witness. Mr. Young, would you rise for the oath?
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Mr. Young, do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
And I think your microphone needs adjustment. Somebody will assist you.
Mr. Young, how long have you been an inmate at Attica?
It's November 7th, 1960.
And how old are you?
50 years old.
Where are you from?
Jamestown, New York.
And would you tell us what kind of neighborhood you grew up in Jamestown?
Well, the neighborhood I grew up in is what we call a democratic neighborhood. Side of town I live in is only three colored families, black families on that side of town. My father's family was a Baptist minister, a Methodist minister, and another family who was a man who worked in the shop. And my street I live at, where my sister lives now with eight children, there's only one family now. She has eight children, never been a lock on the door. There wasn't a lock on the door when I was born. I was born in the front room, and my mother's midwife was an Italian lady. And I have never seen any discrimination, overt discrimination, I'll say. Possibly subtle, yes. But outright, downright discrimination in my life in Jamestown, personally, my personal conduct.
Now, that was the type of neighborhood you grew up in.
Yes, sir.
And you joined the armed services?
I went to Fort Niagara on December 3rd, 1962, and I was discharged from Lovell General Hospital March 21st, 1946.
During World War II, you saw service in the South Pacific?
Europe and the South Pacific.
And as a result of that service, you now receive a disability pension.
Yes,
from the government?
Yes, sir.
And you were honorably discharged?
Oh, yes, definitely.
You were brought back on a hospital ship?
I brought back on a hospital ship. I come across country from San Francisco, Letterman General Hospital, on a hospital train to Fort Devens, Lovell General Hospital in Fort Devens, and that's where I was discharged.
Now, you entered a plea of guilty to manslaughter.
No, sir. Or second-degree murder.
Second-degree murder arising out of a family situation.
Yes, I hit my father-in-law in the head with a rifle, and he subsequently died in 4 days. He was 70 years old. And I was charged for that first-degree murder.
And that was, according to your reports, after you had had some drinks as well?
Well, I was disturbed. It was a family thing.
And for that, you received what kind of sentence?
Well, I pleaded guilty with a stipulation that I would not receive a life sentence for second-degree murder. I received 30 to 60 for second-degree murder. I came to Attica November 7th, 1960, the same day that former President Kennedy and Nixon ran for president, and I was admitted to Attica with that sentence.
Now, would you tell us what you discovered from some of the inmate lawyers at Attica?
Yes, sir. After I'd gotten the inmate population, guys are talking to me, they asked you what kind of sentence you had. I says, I'm doing 30 to 60 for second-degree murder. I had several men call me a liar. At this time, I didn't know nothing about criminal code of procedure or anything else. A friend of mine, who later became a good friend of mine, brought me the criminal code of procedure was formed and showed me the punishment, 1048. The punishment of crime of murder in the second degree shall be not less than 20 years with a maximum of natural life. In March of 1961, New York State sent me back to Chautauqua County with an illegal sentence. My lawyers objected because this was an agreement with a judge, the district attorney, and the district attorney that I would not get any life sentence. I stayed in Chautauqua County 4 days. The judge did offer my attorney, says, have you had any motion to make at this time? My lawyers objected. He says, we do not have any motion because this is a promise of the court. The district attorney set aside my plea, and I was sentenced to 30 to life. Now, when I went back to court, I was started automatic in the law books. I found out that 1048 of the Criminal Code of Procedure was passed in 1905. I also found out it was amended, three words were added in 1927. The punishment in 1905, the punishment of crime of second degree shall be 20 years to natural life. Three words were added in 27, not less than. Now, I subsequently found out that through Federal Rule 11 says any judge who accepts a plea must know what the defendant is pleading to. I've since found out that Elkins versus Gilligan, that any judge who accepts a plea and cannot keep that promise for whatever the promise, for whatever the reason, he himself must reinstate the plea of not guilty. Now, I don't know nothing about law at the time I was sentenced. I fought this thing for exactly 11 years. I went to the appellate division in March of 1961, my lawyers, and the appellate division ruled that I had a legal sentence until I made, they would not rule on my right to withdraw my plea. I went to the Court of Appeals and they affirmed the lower court's decision. I went to Judge Henderson in Buffalo, and the federal judge says, I have a legal sentence till I make a motion to withdraw my plea. We went from there to Foley Square, Second Circuit wouldn't rule on it. My lawyer, now this is the same lawyer I originally had when I was sentenced, brought me back, and we put in a quorum nobis to Judge Henderson in Wyoming County. Judge Henderson ruled I would have a legal sentence until I made a motion to withdraw my plea. I subsequently then put in a quorum nobis to withdraw my plea from the original court. I went back to the original court, I stayed 4 days, and the decision was reserved, and the judge in the original court said that quorum nobis was not the procedure. So I went back to the lawyer, I said, I can't do it. I can't do it by myself. So he says, okay. He went back to the appellate division, my original lawyer, and the appellate division says that I should have made a motion when I went back to court in 1961 to withdraw my plea. I went to the judge of Court of Appeals, and Judge Falls said the only reason I wanted to withdraw my plea is possibly that some of my witnesses were dead. This is a matter of record. I went back, my lawyer went back to Judge Henderson, and Judge Henderson tells me that you used to make a motion to withdraw your plea in 1961. I should have made a motion. Every law on the book says the judge himself has to reinstate my plea. I had worked 8 months. I went to Foley Square after Henderson, and Foley Square just denied me. Now I worked 8 months myself after this to get in, trying to get in the certiorari. And at the time I had worked, I had about a stack of papers, the riot came off. And I lost everything I had, and I haven't did anything else.
Mr. Young, your present sentence
is 30 to life.
Is 30 to life.
Yes, sir.
And if been involved in this incident after the new law was passed, your maximum sentence would have been what for this offense?
Well, under the new law, there's no murder one or murder two.
So?
It's a class A felony or something like that. Now, the new law says 15 to life. Now,
so you would have been eligible
2 years ago
for parole 2 years ago?
Yes, sir.
And what you have expressed just a few moments ago telling us about your case history is a frustration that you have felt with the courts for the last number of years.
I actually never got to the point to say frustration. I was disappointed, yes. But there's so many things involved where, as I can be so thankful. In the first place, I've been under the best medical attention in America for the last 11 years. March of 61, I was sent to Roswell. Previously, before that, I was in the Buffalo Vets Hospital in Buffalo Bailey Avenue, and I was diagnosed as chronic laryngitis. Now, when I was sent out to Roswell, before I went back to court, the first time I went to Roswell, they found Rosol in my throat. And I have been a patient of Roswell's for the last 11 years. I went to Roswell last week.
Mr. Young,
so mentally, I'm saying the frustration isn't as bad, because I know if I hadn't been sent to prison, I might have been dead.
Well, I want to ask you about how you have been able to react to prison life differently from others, but I will come to that. Let me just bring out a few other background facts about you, Mr. Young. You mentioned that you receive a pension.
Yes.
You also have two daughters in college
both
in New York State.
Yes.
And You told us that you grew up in a neighborhood in which you went to school with primarily with white people. Now, your present job at Attica is what?
Powerhouse clerk.
And is that considered a good job?
One of the best jobs in the institution.
In fact, most people don't know that they have permitted an inmate to work in the powerhouse since the uprising.
Well, I'm in the coal gang, but I work.
But you're so trusted at Attica that you've been allowed to work in the powerhouse.
True.
And you have, over these years, gained the respect of many, many correction officers.
Yes, that's true.
And you also have the respect of many of your fellow inmates.
Almost all of them.
In fact, you were elected to the Inmate Grievance Council.
Liaison Committee. Yes, sir.
So you're in a position to tell us something about how it really is today and how it has been in the past. And I'd like to really call upon you to give us your observations. Now, first, Mr. Young, over the 12 years you've been in Attica, you've had only one keep lock.
Well,
is that right? On the record.
I had one keep lock, what they consider as serious. I had a fight.
And
wasn't nothing to it.
But
that was the only accident.
But over 12 years, you've had only one keep lock, and there have been other inmates who've come in, and in the course of a month, have many, many more.
There's a lot of reasons behind.
And that's what I'd like to get at.
I came into Attica, and I was in reception for 6 weeks. In December of 1960, I was put in the metal shop. I was put on a punch press. And I was very fortunate. I went to work for a man who had formerly lived in Jamestown. He was an officer. He wasn't a civilian at that time. And he put me on a punch press. And I want to tell you something about Attica in 1960. I have never seen so much discrimination in one place in my life. There was one black clerk in his institution. There was one black man who had a good job. He was a head electrician. I was in Mississippi in the Army. I was in Alabama in the Army. And I was all over. And I'm born and raised in New York State. And the transition from where I come from the background is from the day of my arrest in Jamestown by the city police until today, I haven't been sworn at by an officer, the county sheriff's department. I haven't had a hand laid on me. I haven't even been insulted by anybody. But why? Now, first of all, as I said, I went to my metal shop on a number 4 punch press. I was making 6 cents a day. After a period of 4 months, I got to be making 24 cents a day. Now, 24 cents a day is top, except for the lead man. The man, two men on a punch press, the oldest man there gets 29 cents. I worked in a metal shop for 7 years. I was one of the high, after I worked in that punch press 2 years, the fellow I worked with went home and I began to make it 29 cents. Now, 29 cents a day. And do you know, they take half of that at the time. I had never in 7 years been able to spend more than $3.50 a month that I earned for my work in 30 every day. Now, I spend $40 a month because I got a pension. So absolutely, my outlook is different from a guy, a 30-year-old man who goes to the commissary and he's earned $3.08. You don't even know what I'm talking about. A man, he's got the guy coffee, sugar, toothpaste, and this is an adult. And nobody cares. He walks up there, he's got a list in his hand, and he gets to the commissary, maybe they're out of peaches, or maybe they're out of sardines, or just in. So he's got to make that whole list over again, trying to squeeze pennies. Do you imagine how degrading that is? No, you don't know. It's just like me and you talking about being blind. We don't even know what it's all about. We can imagine what it's like to be blind, but do we know what it is? And this man he's worked all month long. He's running a punch press, or he's working on a spot well. He's worked on a shaper all month long, and he's made $3.05 or something. And he goes to the commissary, and he says, maybe I can get a jar of coffee. No, I better not. I better get a small jar of coffee because I can get some sugar. Now, I can't get no cigarettes. Maybe I can get 2 packs of cigarettes and a can of Bugler. He gets up there, and maybe they're out of the Bugler. And he's got to go over there and make out that list. I've seen guys take that list and tear it up and throw it right on the floor. The frustration. And me, I can go to commissary and spend $40. Some months. The rule book says I can spend $40 a month in the commissary. Now, I get the Time magazine. I get the Life magazine. I got the Look when they publish Look. I get Sports Illustrated. I get the Jet. I get the Ebony. And I get the Jamestown Journal. I also used to get the Inquirer. Now, okay, my Jamestown paper cost me approximately $24 a year. New York State says I can spend $40 a month. But every time I send for a magazine or a newspaper, them people take it out of my $40. There's no such thing in the rule book. I've seen men who call it, says, I got more money than that. Says, the commissary man says, no, you haven't. And he doesn't know. He gets it down front. Why would Attica, the only place in New York State, take out me $24 of my Jamestown paper and not allow me to spend but $16? I want to tell you a particular case of a friend of mine. This happened 5 years ago. He got $100 for Christmas. Now, he had never made, in the whole time he'd been in Attica, he worked right in the belt shop with me, like I say, more than $3.50 a month to spend. He got $100 for Christmas. And he asked me, first thing he did, he showed me the slip for $100 from his sister in Alabama. He says, Booch, I'm going to get me some underwear. I'm going to get me some shoes. I'm going to send away for it. So he said, let me see your magazine. Well, automatically, when you send to these companies like I do, they send you back their catalogs. So me and him made out a slip. And I showed him how to do it. And he spent $36. He's going to buy it, and he sent the money order in. Now, me and him we work together, we go to commissary together. When this man got to commissary, he had a list made out for $20. He had never seen, now, he had been in Attica before I got there, 5 years. He had never spent over $3.30 the whole time he was there, so he's going to buy cigarettes this time, no bugler. When he got to the window, the man told him he got $3 and some cent. He said, well, I just got money on $100. I know I got. He said, I don't know, which he didn't know. So the officer was good enough to call down front and find out why he didn't have more money than in the books. So they told him, says, you just sent out a money order for $36 to Alden's. Says, you can only spend $3. Now, where in the book does it tell this inmate he can't spend more money than that in the commissary?
Mr. Young, you've seen over these years frustration after frustration of the type you've described.
This is a bad inmate.
How do inmates, that makes a bad inmate.
I know this man. He had never had a keep lock until that point.
And how does an inmate take out these frustrations?
Well, this man closed his door, first thing he did. He went to see the man down front, and he was mad. The man down front says, I don't care what this book says. We run Attica. Now, that's exactly, we come back verbatim. 3 weeks later, the guy was in a fight. He had never been in a fight in 8 years. And no trouble. He had never had a keep lock. The frustration. I mean, the dehumanizing. That's what it is.
Now, you talked about how you had never seen a place with as much segregation as Attica when you first came in. There were black and white sport teams when you came
right.
to Attica. There were black and white barber
everything
shops.
Everything.
Ice.
We had ice. We did it right the 4th of July. They bring out ice. You have your own. It's like a picnic, open house. And they bring ice and dump it down the stairs. Black ice, they call. And the black guys would go get their ice. They call white ice. And the white fellas go get their ice. Now, I mean, I ain't never heard nothing like that in my life. You go to barbershop, they got black haircuts and black shaves and white haircuts and white shaves. I made the first clerk, black clerk, in the metal shop in the history of Attica. The same man who put me on the machine made me a clerk in 1963. I went in the office. In 1963, I became the first black water boy in Attica. You know what a water boy is? You got three companies with open garage on. You get locked in at night at 4:45, and they let one man out to pass water up and down the garage. There hadn't been a black man that could hold just that job in Attica. There wasn't a black man who worked on a line serving food when I went to Attica. You couldn't get those type of jobs. Now, this is New York State. I've been here all my life.
Now, how is Attica different in that respect today?
It's a lot different. I won't lie. It's a lot different. And I think we can hold almost, I'll say 96% of the jobs in Attica, if we are qualified, we can get them today. But that's reason came about. It's when the population started turning from white to black, you could see it. But before that, this one man I tell you about worked in the metal shop with me. He was a college graduate. Right now he holds a good job as a director of athletics somewhere in New York State. Now, when I went in the shop, like I said, I got one bath a week. I talked to this fellow about it. He was a commissioner of football. He also had something to do with baseball. I said, how can I get more baths a week? He said, become a baseball official, a football official. You can get a bath on a weekend. Boom, right away, I got on that football list and that baseball list because I can get a bath every week on the weekends. The reason I left the metal shop after 7 years because I got tired of one bath a week.
Now, what about the correction offices at Attica today in terms of discrimination and racial attitudes? How would you characterize it, Mr. Young?
Well, I would say, from my personal observations, this is just personal, I can't speak for anybody else, that we have three or four officers in Attica who shouldn't belong around any black man nowhere because they are racist. And that is a small minority. I mean, these men come into work in the morning and they're going to find what they can do to irritate an inmate. I mean, they do it deliberately with malice aforethought, but that's in a very small minority. I know, because I know there's, I'm not talking dealing in personalities, but as a whole, no. I won't lie, as a whole, no. The average, I have never had even an officer holler at me.
Now, Mr. Young, the court reporter has to change his tape. I should say this is being taken by a stenotype machine. Many people may have not seen that before in the television audience, and it's a form of making symbols which are then transcribed and printed into a record. Mr. Zook is our court reporter.